with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Thursday morning out there. Western Oklahoma, welcome to The Skinny on Sports, right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. We're glad to have you along for the next hour. Coming up on the show today, what we've got written down at least, it's Major League Baseball official opening day. Make our picks. Division winners, wild cards, who's going to play in the championship series, who's going to play in the World Series, who is going to win the World Series in our minds. We'll do that at the end of the show. NCAA tournament is back tonight. What's the best game, or which game are you most looking forward to watching tonight? Who's the best player on the floor in either location this evening? And then what result? I think this is actually a really easy one today. But what result tonight would crush the most brackets? I think that's a more interesting question for tomorrow, but we'll ask it tomorrow as well. We can talk some rating stuff. It's amazing. Men's and women's tournaments are having almost record, well, and men's both record ratings. People want to watch. I mean, I wish they would just stop comparing the two. More people are watching the men. There are always going to be more people watching the men because of that March Madness brand, because of filling out brackets. It's so ingrained in, like, American sports culture that there's no sense in even comparing the two. Just stop it. The women are doing great on their own. The men are doing great on their own. Quit making it be a thing.
The only comparison should be years prior to each other.
To each other, yeah. The women to the women. Exactly. The men to the men. You don't, because the women are, it's always going to make you look dumb when you say things and you actually start feeding into this narrative. Hell, Caitlin Clark is talking about how more people are interested in the women than the men. No, they're not. But you can say you don't even have to say that. Just say more people are interested in this women's tournament than ever before. That's good enough. I think the real story here is, though, instead of comparing the two, I think they should be compared to the other basketball, which is the NBA. And if you look across sports viewing, everything is up rating wise. Except for the NBA. I wonder why that is.
That's interesting.
NFL rule changes that were adopted this week. We'll talk a little bit about that. Have you seen the kickoff?
Yeah.
We'll talk about that. Thunder lose last night in overtime without SGA to the Rockets. Some bench guys that have been struggling played pretty well. SGA day-to-day is what Dagnall said, with the contusion in his thigh. I think there's a couple of silver linings, not just the rest. I've got another one, and I hate to go. I mean, everybody, most everybody thinks Presti is obviously a genius. And I hate to give him too much credit with this theory, but I've got a bit of a theory on maybe another reason why SGA gets rest. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area at any point, in the coming days or weeks or months or years, you can log on to KADSAM.com, or even better, I would download the app. The Paragon app is free, and it's got everything. Radio, Penny News, Big Elk and Paragon TV, every single thing we do. You can find in that app. And, of course, then there's also the Skinny on Sports podcast, where you record the show every day. Podcast, and you can find it anywhere and everywhere podcasts drop. Jared Atha is wearing a blue cap with a golden Texas Ranger tee, obviously symbolizing a World Series championship from a year ago.
You will see them wear it tonight. It's how they have these. I mean, have you seen the gold collection? You haven't seen it?
I have not.
They're wearing them. They'll wear these every once in a while, and they're going to wear them tonight.
Are the unis got some gold in them?
It's very subtle, but it's cool. It's not it's not overtaking. It's the, still the white uniforms and your traditional Rangers across the chest and name and number on the back, but it's outlined in gold.
So it's not like they, because don't they have kind of a light blue one?
They have those powder blues they wear on blues. Home Sundays.
So it's not just a gold instead of the powder blue.
No. There's
they haven't overdone it.
You always heard there during the offseason, all the banter from the Ranger fans was you know, what are the gold? Because there's this is a thing that people are starting to do now to commemorate winning a title, and they so there's all these mock-ups, and one was like a pure black one with gold writing, which I did not like. But this is what I like, because it's real subtle, but it's like a nod to the title. I love the hat, so I grabbed the hat, and it came here just in time for opening day. So, yeah.
Well, wonderful.
Yep.
All right, so last night, Thunder start out way behind without SGA. End up taking the lead in halftime, back and forth. J-Dub hits a shot to send it into overtime, but then, man, Jalen Green was just too much and unguardable for the Houston Rockets. He scores 37 on a 14 of 24 night, 7 of 11 from 3. Houston wins their 10th straight game to stay in that play-in game chase right behind Golden State with a 126 win over the Oklahoma City Thunder. Only their 11th win away from home. I think you could pick out some good and you could pick out some bad as far as Oklahoma City. They obviously fought really hard, even though SGA wasn't out there. Giddey, once again, was fantastic. 31, tying a career high. 7 rebounds, 4 assists. J-Dub didn't shoot it as well as he's been accustomed to. Only 3 of 10 from 3, and he's one of the leaders in percentage in the NBA in three-point shooting. Did dish out 10 assists. Hayward played by far his best game in a Thunder uniform, knocking down all 3 threes he shot for 13. But I think more importantly, a couple of guys, especially Isaiah Joe. Isaiah Joe got off to the hot start, and he's really been one of the better three-point shooters in the league since he got to Oklahoma City. He struggled in the month of March, down below 30% from 3. He snapped out of it a bit with a 4 of 6 night, scored 17, had that crazy dunk over Jeff Green that I don't think people even realize he could do. And then Wiggins got more minutes, obviously. And I know people are clamoring for him to get the minutes that Hayward's kind of been getting. He scored 16. He was a minus 14 in his minutes. But, he's a guy that it feels like he affects winning a lot when he's out on the floor. But ultimately, just wasn't quite enough.
I like the showing. I mean, it was a bad start after the first quarter, and after hearing that at SGA was out, kind of expected. But then they fought, and the silver lining is you're going to see like all those guys you mentioned get some more minutes, and which could be valuable later on. And I almost mentioned it yesterday about the SGA situation of arrest, and this was probably the opportunity to do it on the second of a back to back. And because there's not a lot of back-to-backs left, if any, I don't believe, if I remember right. And and there's not a lot of games down the road that you wouldn't want to rest him very much. But the injury, however severe it may be, might force their hand where they're just going to have to sit him as much as they can until the playoffs start to get him back. So. Again, I mean, that was a great effort from him and with those guys. Giddey, I don't know what to think, man. I mean, I don't want to call what he went through this season a slump because, I mean, by definition of a slump, they're short and quick. But maybe he's figured something out. Maybe, I hate to say, taking SGA off the court kind of forced his hand to play better last night, which he was great. That shot from the seat of his pants. I mean, sometimes a little luck's all you need, and it was awesome. But and then seeing those other guys get in there and play well against this upstart Rockets team that's gonna looks like they're on their way too. So I mean you hate to lose it and now what is that? Drop them all the way to third.
Yeah, everybody's tied in the loss column at 22 losses.
There's Denver. A lot up in the air. This doesn't change a lot. But I mean you're looking at the schedule, I just pulled it up. There's like one more back to back.
There's two. One on the road, Philly and then back to back with Boston. And then home games, Sacramento and San Antonio.
So maybe sacrifice and set him against Philly and see what you got against Boston. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. You're going to have to use him sparingly, maybe cut down on his minutes a little bit, because you definitely want a 100% or even a 90% SGA in the playoffs, and you don't want to re-aggravate anything.
Well, if it really is a thigh bruise, then it's just going to take rest and time.
Yeah.
And so that's not something that would be concerning long-term. I know that they want to give him some rest. I know that everyone realizes that no matter what seed it is, no matter who the opponent is in the first round, everyone realizes and understands that Oklahoma City has an infinitely better chance with SGA healthy than with him not. And so sacrificing the one seed for the three seed but getting SGA healthy is obviously the choice. I wonder, obviously, I mean, that's happening some, right? I mean, we would all agree if he's not 100% healthy. I mean, they've got the top – They're hosting a home playoff series no matter what. Like, they literally can't lose enough games to fall out of hosting. You know, and with everything in flux below them so much to where one night can change, go from like 5 to 8. You know, you can't – it's not one of those years where you can kind of pick and choose how to finish to try to find the opponent that maybe you want to match up with. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, because it changes nightly. I wonder if it's this, and you mentioned Giddey. A lot of people believe that this will be the last season we see Giddey in a Thunder uniform. And for a bunch of this time in this season, until the month of March, Giddey struggled to try to find his way, find his spot, and his fit within the team now that Chet's there. Obviously, J-Dub's kind of passed him in development. I wonder if this isn't a two-pronged approach with SGA. One, to give him rest and have him healthy for the 100% for the playoffs. But two, without him, that means Giddey becomes another primary ball handler along with Jalen Williams. And just remind the rest of the league going into the offseason how good he is with the ball in his hands. Almost pump up his trade value by showcasing his real ability on your team, not necessarily our team.
I understand. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That may be a little bit too, like, 4D chess thinking for Presti, you know, but it wouldn't shock anybody if that's not a little bit on his mind. But it certainly gives Giddey a chance to show somebody out there, hey, remember, when I had the ball in my hands, I was able to do these things. And I know it doesn't seem like a fit when he's not making shots, and maybe it seems better when he does. But the one thing that Giddey can and has to provide in this playoff run that's upcoming is something he's pretty good at, and that's rebounding. And that's something the Thunder struggle with, obviously, without a true big guy to, you know, man the paint. Giddey's rebounding in this playoff run is going to be vital to the Thunder's success. And that's the one thing, as much as it's infuriating to watch him brick threes when nobody's guarding him, you always have to remember that's not the only part of the game. And he does provide value outside of making shots. And then when he does make shots, you go, holy cow, why can't this happen all the time? I mean, even not even to the 45% clip that he's shooting in the month of March, but even have, I mean, cut that down, say 8%. If he could knock down 37 or 38% from three, he would be an almost invaluable player, even on this team.
Any concern? Now, the SGA was not playing. Giddey did what he did. Any concern with what Chet did?
Or did, got in foul trouble. He fouled out. I mean, it's just one of those games. You know, it is a game that you would think without Şengün on the other side, it's one that you kind of circle for Chet to dominate, and he just never really got in a flow. You know what I mean? It just played 18 minutes, didn't make either of his shots, did block some shots, but you know, I think he's just it's kind of the roller coaster of a rookie.
Yeah.
You know, and it is what it is. So Thunder get the night off. KD returns again tomorrow with the Suns in town. Boy, what a dumpster fire that's becoming. It's probably a good thing the season's nearing the end for Phoenix, because if not, they might be the team, and they still possibly could be the team, that Houston would be setting their sights on to blow past. but I don't know if there's enough time in the season for Phoenix to free fall all the way down that far. But, you know, they're going to be somewhere in the mix of the play-in or the sixth seed. Man. It's a weird deal there.
I mean, remember just months ago, we're asking the question of, do we want KD back? Do we want KD back?
Oh, always. Always. You can always use a guy like that. I mean, he's like what you hope Chet can sort of be, but he's already that. You know what I mean? I mean,
it's just not working.
It's just
Phoenix.
A mess. They don't have working. A bench. They don't have anything to change it. They don't have any picks that they could trade. You know,
oh, no.
Their bench guys are all expiring contracts, and this is just year one of it. Implosion feels inevitable for Phoenix.
They might. They very well could blow it up.
Yeah, I think so. So Thunder, hard fought, but they couldn't get it done last night. All right, NFL rule changes. There's been a lot made of the hip drop tackle over the last couple of seasons. I know one in the playoff game out in San Francisco for Dallas 2 years ago, when Pollard went down from a hip drop tackle. You know, Mark Andrews suffered an injury on a Monday Night Football game from a hip drop. You know, it's just a lot of – I don't know. I mean, it just feels to me like – and I think I saw a deal where they did a study. The very, 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 very minute percentage of tackles in games in the NFL would be ruled hip drop tackles. So it's almost like you're trying to solve a problem that doesn't really exist. And here's what I'm afraid is going to happen. You're going to create a problem that never existed in the first place, and that is more controversy by such a subjective decision from a referee whether or not a tackle is a hip drop tackle.
Right.
It just feels like this is going to be the new roughing the passer.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of equated it to when the horse collar tackle came in, when they outlawed that. And there's still times you'll see it and go, why is that not a horse collar tackle? Well, because he grabbed him by the jersey, he didn't get underneath, you know. Again, a little subjective, especially in the gameplay, as fast as that's happening to make or not make that call. So we'll see how this pans out. I mean, that's kind of took care of itself, and the tackling, that horse collar tackling has more or less gone away. So we'll see. We'll see. It's going to take some, like anything, it's going to take some growing pains with it and some acclimation to it with the officials and the players too, to stop doing it. But I get the idea. I mean, it's player safety and it's you see some of those injuries and it's brutal when they get tackled like that. So I understand the reasoning behind it. I just think, you know, it, like I said, it's going to take a little bit, maybe a season or two, before both the players realize we can't do this anymore and the officials know how to call it.
Yeah, and I mean, I just think it's trying to eliminate injuries and it's going to create other ones because you're starting to force the defensive guys. Mm-hmm. About all they can do now is just hit somebody right in the knee.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's kind of no horse collar, no, you know, obviously the head-to-head. Now you can't tackle from behind. I mean, it feels like offense is the name of the game, and that's going to continue with this new rule. Now, the kickoff seems pretty interesting to me.
You know what?
And how that all works.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So, what? I can't remember what yard lines they are on.
God,
is it the 20 and the 30?
I can't remember. I've seen.
So, the kicker is all by himself on the other side of the midfield stripe. And actually, it's a punter is a possibility. Anyhow, everyone else is down at like the 20 for the offense, the return team, maybe the 30 for the kickoff team. So they kick it and then go from there. So there's no sprinting 50 yards down to just get crushed or crush a guy.
Right. So
it's all way more contained.
A coach, he was my history teacher in high school, called them the kamikazes.
Yeah.
They just go at full speed and hit somebody. Yeah. Yeah, that's gone. That's not a thing anymore.
What I want to see.
And remember, we saw this in the XFL.
That's right. And that's where it kind of came from.
And so, which I liked. I liked it. When I saw it, everyone else kind of like, this isn't a bad idea.
No, it's not a bad idea. And it accomplishes a couple of things. I think it it's not the kickoff that we're used to seeing, but I think it might allow for more kickoffs to actually take place. You know, it seems like it's just anymore, unless it's just a crazy windy game in the NFL, every kickoff is a touchback.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
kickers
so
have gotten so strong.
Yeah, they just kick it forever.
Yeah.
But now maybe there's a little bit more strategy to it. And then what I can't wait.
Get some air underneath.
Yeah. And, you know, when your guys can take off or what have you. But what I really want to see is what happens if a guy gets loose.
Oh, yeah.
Because then the returner has got like 30 yards running right at the kicker. I mean, the poor kickers are going to, the videos of kicker embarrassment are going to go off the charts because they are going to have zero chance.
Not everybody's Pat McAfee.
And especially that much of a sprint because, you know, a lot of times, even when the kickers do get involved, there's other guys in the way. Well, on this, I mean, I guess your strategy could be maybe drop a guy on the edges back instead of just everybody attacking. But if everybody attacks and they break through, I mean, we see it with running backs and safeties from 10 yards. This is another 30 or so to that, and they're not ever going to make a tackle.
What happens when it's late game and you need an onside? Do you have to alert, hey, we're doing an onside here?
That's a great question. I didn't read up enough on that.
Because you're taking the players off the line up.
Right? You may go back.
Do you have to go, hey, Mr. Official? But there goes your surprise onside kicks. Those are gone.
Yeah, those are gone. And I kind of wish they would do the, instead of the onside kick, you know, have the ball at what's the rule, like the 20 and it's 4th and 15 or what have you. For, you know, the kicking team, instead of doing an onside kick, their offense goes out at their own 20 and it's like 4th and 15. And so you either get it and move forward, or the other team takes the control of the ball wherever you get tackled, or if it's an incomplete pass or whatever. You know, that's been something that's been kicked around and used a little bit at different times in different leagues that, you know, anymore you don't – the rules of the onside are so sissified where you can't just go blast a guy to let your guy get a chance, you know what I mean? And you hardly ever see him recovered anymore.
Well, from the text line, it does say you have to declare an onside.
Yeah, see, I think that was right. And then you move back to normal.
Back to the normal?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay, well.
But you're right. Surprise onsides are over.
Those are done.
Because if you go back to the...
You don't see a lot anymore. But
no.
Well, sometimes you do. Sometimes those teams who have nothing to lose and trying to upset somebody, you'll see it. But
yeah, no, and you can't do it till the fourth quarter.
Can't do an onside till the fourth quarter? Wow, okay. Well, I like the rule. I thought that was a thing. The XFL, the second or third or whatever iteration it was so proactive with rules like this.
Yes.
And I that was one everybody seemed to be in favor of. So, yeah. Now the question is, when does it trickle over to the college game and then the high school game?
Yeah, you know, that's right.
It takes time because they always sit back and see, well, how does the NFL do it? Does it work or not work? And this might be a thing we got to prepare for.
Do you remember, speaking of the XFL, the very first iteration of the XFL, you remember how that went with the kickoffs?
I remember instead of a coin flip, they put the ball right in the middle
exactly.
And they made them run.
Yeah. Talk about injuries.
Yes, they're
all running
there was people
full speed
hurt.
Right at each other.
Yeah, I remember that.
Let's go back to that. Yeah, he hate me.
He hate
Rod,
me.
Rod. I can't remember his last name.
Jones, was it?
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was a weird summer, man. I remember watching that stuff going, what is this? What is this? The ball was black and like red, and it was trippy.
Oh, man.
Hey, you know what starts Saturday is the AFUS
UFL,
whatever
it
is.
United Football League, UFL.
Oh, Bobby Stoops and the Renegades get back at it.
Yeah, they're playing the two-time USFL defending champ. Hanging out here on a Sweet 16 Thursday. The NCAA tournament gets back on the floor tonight. The East and the West brackets going at it in the regional semifinals. And if you're looking for a place to go watch those games, I have your spot. The Boomtown Grill is March Madness headquarters, and even more especially on a Thursday. Do you know what this Thursday special is, Jared?
The wings.
50-cent boneless chicken wings. It does not get any better than wings, beer, and sports. Sorry about your luck there, B-dubs. I stole your moniker.
I thought that sounded familiar.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, well.
By the way, how scary would it be to see a buffalo inside a bar?
Blocking you out, by the way.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever, buffalo. Anyhow.
Sometimes I wish kids would watch that commercial and take notes.
Boomtown Grill tonight, 50-cent boneless chicken wings. And they've got tons of sauces. Mild, chipotle, sriracha, garlic parmesan, mango habanero, hot barbecue, kicking bourbon, and sweet red chili. I would recommend the mango habanero myself. I think they're delicious, nice, sweet, and a little spice. There's also pizzas and pastas, sandwiches, burgers, 12 big screen TVs, happy hour from 2 to 6, so you can get primed up for the 6 o'clock tip there at Boomtown Grill. Open 7 days a week, 11 to 10 Sunday through Thursday, 11 to 11 on Friday and Saturday. It's down at 2103 South Main is the Boomtown Grill. All right, Jared, tonight, as I mentioned, East and West back on the floor here in the Sweet 16. Which game are you most looking forward to watching?
I would have to say I'll give you two answers. One, because I think it'll be really competitive and fun, is Illinois and Iowa State. And two, because of my bracket interest, North Carolina and Alabama. Because I have Alabama upsetting them. But the first one, though, Illinois-Iowa State, I think that's your question, is what real interesting, fun one I think we can get. It's going to be the nightcap there between those two.
Yeah, I really wish these two games were split. not the nightcaps in both locations.
Same time.
Because to me, Bama, North Carolina is by far the funnest game.
Yeah.
This is going to be up and down. I think they're going to play at a really enjoyable pace. And it's just going to be a fun game. And this might be someone, you know, 80s and 90s winner.
I hope so, yeah.
With the way that those two teams play. Illinois-Iowa State is a fascinating matchup because you've got the Iowa State defense that has just locked people down, clamped people down all year long, versus Illinois, who has been an offensive savant throughout the Big Ten tournament and now into the NCAA tournament. They have played really, really, really good offense. So this is kind of like – it's like the Bama, North Carolina is who's better at the way we play. And Carolina can slow it down a little bit. And obviously Bama won that slow game against Grand Canyon. But I think this is going to be let the horses run. And then the other, the contrast of styles between offense and defense. I think both of those – it's kind of the appetizer at first. Unless one of the underdogs – makes a push to bust a bracket, either Clemson or obviously San Diego State.
Well, how about that? We haven't even talked about the rematch between UConn and SDSU. That one, the first one tonight, right?
No, Clemson, Arizona is the first tip at 6:09. But then, San Diego State, UConn at 6:39.
Storyline there, obviously, the Aztecs want to get some revenge.
They do.
UConn trying to defend.
And I put this on the list today, which result would crush the most brackets without necessarily looking at who was playing. Once I looked at who was playing, the obvious answer is San Diego State beating UConn.
Yeah.
Tomorrow we'll have tomorrow night's games, we'll actually have a debate about which one would crush more brackets.
Right.
Tonight, it's not even a question. I mean, like I said, I didn't even pay attention
to who's.
At least
in our group, the UConn game. Tomorrow, though, it's a little bit more disparity there.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's still an answer, at least in our group. But I'm
sure.
I think nationwide. It's pretty close between Purdue and Houston tomorrow night. Who's the best player tonight?
Don't ask me that. You go. I don't know the players very well, man.
I've got three.
Okay.
I think the best player tonight is Illinois' Terrence Shannon Jr. He's averaged 28 a game in the two tournament games. Game one, he scored 26. Shot at 56% from the field, 33 from three. Second game scored 30 on 10 of 14 shooting at 71%, made 2 of 5 threes. You know, he blew through that Big Ten tournament, scored 40 in the semifinals, like 37 in the finals. He's been on a heater. Left-handed kid, came from Texas Tech in the transfer portal. He has been pretty well unstoppable. And, oh, by the way, if you want to foul him, that's a terrible idea as well because he shoots 93% from the free throw line. I think he, against that Iowa State defense, is going to be an awesome watch to see if they can find a way to slow him down because nobody else has in almost a month. It's been the Terrence Shannon Jr. show for the Illinois Fighting Illini. And offensively, there's not a better player. Another guy, which if your upset is going to happen, and oh, by the way, I have that same upset in the other night game with Bama and UNC.
You picked Bama.
I picked Bama.
Look at you.
Originally, I had Bama in the Final Four. Mark Sears, lefty point guard. He also has averaged 28 in the two games. He shot it incredibly well from behind the arc, 8 of 17 in the two games from three. He's also grabbed 12 rebounds and dished out 6 assists in the win against Grand Canyon. He shot it well over 50% at 17 of 31. Assist guy, rebound guy. For a small guy, he could rebound. Also, there's a theme here. If you foul him late, he's 82% from the free throw line in the tournament. The last guy, and you'll notice him immediately if it gets tense in Boston. If it gets tense in Boston for UConn, a big part of that reason will be Jaden Ledee. He's actually averaged 29 in the first two games, 32 in game one, in that really close game against, was it UAB? They played first, San Diego State, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
He was 11 of 18 from the field. He's made all three of the threes he shot, grabbed basically a double-double, a 30-point double-double in the first two games, 8 rebounds, 9 rebounds. Also, 83% from the free throw line. And I know in that UAB game, he made a bunch of them late to kind of hold off Alabama Birmingham. So those are the three guys. You know, you can mention Klingon from UConn, the big giant dude, or the shooter. I can't remember the shooter's name, the white guy. Like number 12. Jumped right out of my head. I was about to say it.
I was thinking of Newton over there.
Yeah, Newton.
To answer that question, I usually go, okay, who's the best team? Well, I have UConn as a runner-up this year, so I'll go there first. Newton has statistically been the better player this season and for these first couple games. He had 20 last time against Northwestern. You get 20 from him, they got a good shot. So I'll go with him.
Okay, yeah, Chase Hunter's another guy. If Arizona is going to be challenged by Clemson, Chase Hunter and P.J. Hall down low, those are guys that have played pretty well so far in this tournament. Arizona obviously has the experience with North Carolina a couple years ago. And how much fun would that be if we do get – he's Arizona. And so how much fun would it be if we do get that game, Arizona and North Carolina, the Caleb Love game? To go to the Final Four. That would be kind of fun.
That'd be fun. That'd be fun.
But I've got Clemson in a drawing pool that I'm in, so go Tigers. Didn't think you'd make it this far, boys, so you might as well keep on going.
Hey, they look solid against Baylor. I thought they'd give that one up, and they didn't.
And they looked really good in that first. New Mexico was a really popular pick mm-hmm. in that first round game, and they just destroyed them. I mean, it was... I mentioned Kenny Smith. I couldn't believe it. Watching that New Mexico game just because I drew them out in that drawing. And at the halftime or maybe at the end of that game, he was talking about how they've got top 10, top 8 talent in the tournament. And I thought, what? You know, early on, they won a bunch of games to start. So maybe they're better than I realized. And maybe 6th seed. They were a dangerous 6th seed. I don't know. I couldn't tell you going in, but... Rooting for him now, even though we got Arizona playing in the finals. My bracket's busted anyhow. So just rip it to shreds, Clemson. Rip it to shreds. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. The tournament has been really played at, a higher level than I know I expected. I didn't expect to see, you know, the scoring has been, it seems up over the last few years to me. Maybe just the games that I really paid attention to. A lot of points were scored, but what, there's been 100 scored, what, 4 or 5 times? Houston scored 100. Purdue scored 100. Florida scored 100 and lost.
Colorado scored 100
yeah,
and won.
Yeah, that's right.
That
yeah,
same game.
Yeah, that same game. It seemed like there might have been one other game where somebody put up a hundo, but...
I'm scanning. I can't find maybe it. You mentioned Alabama, Charleston.
That's what that was what it was. Game. Alabama. Yeah. Alabama scored 100. So there are 5 different occurrences.
Charleston scored 96.
Yes, yes. I mean, A&M scored 95 and lost. You'd have thought it had taken them 3 halves to get to 95 against Houston. Instead, they lost in overtime.
I don't know what to make of it because usually when you see scoring like that, it's from teams that have played together for a long time and are really good. And now in this transfer portal age, you get a new team every year. Maybe sometimes you just find the right clicks, you know, just
and shots
well.
Go in.
Yeah.
You know, or you get tons of free throws, create those chances like A&M did. Or, you know, Purdue, gosh, you can see the –
That's an interesting study. I wonder if someone's accumulating all these points scored. Is this the most points scored in a tournament in so long, you know?
Sure.
I'm sure that stat's out there.
Oh, yeah, I bet we can look it up.
Or you can just sit here and do the math. Go ahead.
Well, there's 158. 100. It's going to take a while. Maybe through the break.
The over-under of the entire tournament. I wonder if that's a prop bet somewhere.
I bet you it is somewhere. Do you have a cool season grass as shade grass or maybe even for your entire lawn? We're talking about fescue, a rye, a bluegrass. Superior Lawns offers weed control and fertilization for all those, as well as the normal Bermuda that permeates the area mostly. Those cool season grasses are really starting their peak growing season right now. And so you need to get everything, the weeds under control, and get it fertilized so that it can grow and be awesome and green throughout the summertime. How do you do that? You give my man Scott Kelly a call. 580-799-5670. Superior Lawns. We've got granular application programs, insecticides to discourage the grubs and other insects, and of course, the fertilization programs that will bring that zing to your yard. I've already seen green grass pop up in my yard. I probably should have scalped it already. I haven't. Sorry, Scott. I'll do better. Superior Lawns, right here in Western Oklahoma. It is opening day, Jared. Opening day in Major League Baseball. And for the first time in your life, and for the first time in the history of the Texas Rangers, they will begin a Major League Baseball season as the defending champs. Will that pressure be too much for them to have kind of a follow-up season to what most people would consider a surprising year that earned them the World Series trophy?
No, I think that winning the way they finished last year and winning the title maybe ahead of schedule, but the idea was to turn that corner and get out of the cellar and be contenders, be right there, say in August and September. So ahead of schedule, yes, maybe a little surprising, but I don't think they're going anywhere because they're built to continue this. They got some youth there. Carter's one of them. We mentioned Wyatt Lankford, a couple of rookies that are on the roster. The pitching, when it gets healthy, because there's still some health there, issues with Scherzer and DeGrom, but when they get healthy, CY has it going on. He's not constantly trying to work through development like Daniels did. It's a win-now mentality. Went and got Seager and Simeon, and then obviously it paid off. So I don't think they're going anywhere, if that's answering your question by any means. So I don't think any kind of pressure is going to get to them or anything like that. They'll be right there in the mix. And that's, as a Ranger fan, all I could ask for. I was tired of being in the cellar all the time and just kept hearing, well, the farm system will be, it'll be fine. The farm system's great. The farm system's awesome. And it is. It has been developed. And Daniels deserves a lot of credit for that. But now it's finally starting the proactive buying and trading and getting guys that solidify that rotation paid off last year, and I think they're going to stay towards the top of the West in the AL for the next few years. So I'm happy about it. I don't think any pressure is on these guys because they got some guys that have already dealt with that kind of pressure. You know, like Simeon and Seager and Scherzer, DeGrom, when he gets there, when he gets healthy, they've been in high pressure situations. It's nothing new for him.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing is they did all that without DeGrom, which, I mean, there's no way you can trust DeGrom to be there, but they did it without him. And like Scott just said on the text line, Jordan Montgomery,
yeah,
that loss could be at least mitigated with DeGrom coming back fully healthy and what he's able to do.
The key part to this season for the Rangers is this almost the first half of the season.
Yep. Don't fall out of contention too far.
That's when the projected timeline is when you get these guys back healthy, is around the All-Star break, maybe a little later. If they can stay right there again, like towards the top of the division, and then get those guys that could put them over the top, who knows what happens during the trade deadline. CY is so proactive. So they're not happy with just winning one. They want to continue this thing. That's the feeling I get from all the social media banter from their official social media accounts and all the videos you've seen from them. So that's the key, though, is the first part of this season.
Okay, so let's make our picks. Start in the American League. We'll go to the East. Who will be the AL East champs in your mind?
I like the Orioles. That's such a stacked division, obviously, but I like the Orioles. They're so young. They won over 100 games last year. Fell short to that hot Ranger team we just talked about in the playoffs, but I think they win it, and they win it going away.
I like the Orioles as well. I think they addressed some of the needs in the offseason by getting Corbin Burns. Do not be surprised whatsoever if the AL Cy Young winner isn't Corbin Burns with the Orioles. Mm-hmm. And so I like Baltimore as well. In the Central, I've got Minnesota. Seems like honestly, of all the division picks in the AL, they were far and away the easiest one for me, and maybe even throughout the entire Major League Baseball, but Minnesota in the Central.
I have the Twins as well.
And in the West, I've got Houston as the AL West champs. Part of the reason why is that what you just talked about with the Rangers, maybe taking them a little bit to get everybody fully going. I don't know. I could see the Rangers season going a lot like it did last year. Getting guys back, getting rolling, and then being as dangerous as anybody going into the playoffs. But at least for the entirety of this season, I got Houston winning the West.
Yeah, I got Houston winning the West. Question is age, where they're at with that. They did extend a little man, but new GM. Does anything change there in that dynamic? But they're still really, really good. I got them, but the Rangers nipping at their heels. This might be their last hoorah. I don't know if that's the word to use, but their last before that age starts to show itself. But yeah, I got the Astros winning the West.
All right, wild cards. Until they don't make the playoffs, I'm going to pick Tampa just because they always seem to do it. I've got Tampa, I've got the Rangers, and then it came down to me that last wild card between Seattle and Toronto, and I went with the Blue Jays.
It's a good one. I like the Rangers and Rays, like you said, and I stayed in the East. I think the Yankees.
Yankees, yeah. That was the other one out of those
with
three.
Judge, if Judge is healthy, yeah.
Okay, ALCS, who you got?
The CS, I have the Orioles, and I didn't do the – so let me go here. I have the Orioles and Rangers.
I've got Orioles and Houston being both winner. I mean, that is the easiest way to project it for me. Being both division winners, winning, and maybe they'd be apart from each other. Who you got in the World Series from the AL?
Orioles.
I've got Houston. All right, the National League. East, easy, right?
Braves.
Yeah, Atlanta. The Central's interesting.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I think you could make a case for about anybody but my Brewers.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think the Brewers are there. I do think that they may have the Rookie of the Year in the National League, but losing Burns, they just and the other teams are getting better. You know what I mean? It feels like the other teams. I went with Cincinnati.
I like that. I went with the Cubs. I
had the Cubs and scratched them out for Cincinnati.
Yeah, I went to multiple previews and see what everyone else kind of thought. And a lot of people are talking about the Cubbies. So in honor of my boy Derek, who's a big Cubs fan, and maybe even Will.
Yeah, I picked
the Cubs.
I didn't pick them because of Will. in the West, probably the best division in baseball. With the Dodgers, with the Giants, with Arizona, with San Diego.
Yeah, it'd be fun to
probably the best division. I've got the Dodgers.
I do too. I have speaking of proactive, I mean, they went after obviously Ohtani, one of them, but they didn't stop there. So I'll go with the Dodgers.
Wild cards. I did tip my cap to Will with the Cubs. I've got Philly, and I went with the Diamondbacks over the Giants.
I went Philly. Phillies. I went the Diamondbacks, and I put the Padres in there.
Padres, yeah. I mean, that's one, that West is awesome. All right, NLCS. We wanted it last year. We didn't get it. I want Dodgers-Braves.
Dodgers-Braves, yeah.
Okay, so you've got Baltimore in the World Series. Who do you have them playing?
Dodgers.
You've got the Dodgers. Okay. I've got Atlanta. I've got Atlanta-Houston in the World Series.
Okay. So our champs are obviously going to be different.
Your champ is?
Dodgers.
My champ is Atlanta.
Atlanta. Very good.
Atlanta in a great series against the Astros. What does everybody else got? 225-9698. Send us your text. Who you got in the World Series, in the ALCS? Any leans as far as MVPs and that kind of thing? Cy Youngs? I mentioned Corbin Burns in the AL. I think that he's in a great spot to post stats, you know, winning stats with what the Orioles have around him.
Without looking, I'm going to guess the betting favorite, Ohtani, as an MVP candidate. I think the fun race is going to be Rookie of the Year between, I mentioned, Langford and Carter, and then, of course, you got, goodness gracious, Orioles.
Oh, Jackson Holliday.
Holliday, thank you. I think that might be the more entertaining race.
This has got. I just found this ESPN preview.
Betting favorites and stuff of
just kind of
winners.
Yeah, they're riders like guessing. AL MVP. They've got Juan Soto and Julio Rodriguez, both with 8 votes out of 16, 20, around 25 or so.
That's another reason why I like the Yankees is Juan Soto.
Some other names: Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman. Obviously, a couple of Orioles there. Let's see about Rookie of the Year. All right, Rookie of the Year, they've got, landslide to Wyatt Langford.
Wow.
The other two receiving votes. So he got 20 of, this is easier to add because there's only three, 20 of 26 of the votes to Wyatt Langford. Holliday got 5, Evan Carter got 1.
There you go.
And then the AL Cy Young, Corbin Burns. But this one's there's a lot of people getting votes. Pablo Lopez, that's Twins. Valdez, some different guys there. Let's go and look at the NL MVP. Any guesses? You said Ohtani.
Ohtani is my guess.
Mookie Betts.
Is Ohtani's health a concern, I wonder? He'd have to win it with his bat, clearly.
Yeah. Betts, Acuna, Fernando Tatis, Freddie Freeman, some different guys that got votes there. Rookie of the Year, yeah, sure enough, Jackson, I think it's Chirio, Milwaukee. He got the most votes. Some other names were Yamamoto, which he got lit already once.
Yeah.
Young Ho Lee, Jackson Merrill, Paul Skeens, a couple of votes there. And then Cy Young, overwhelmingly, and this doesn't surprise me at all, it's been the name I'd have said, Spencer Strider for the Braves. Zach Wheeler, Yamamoto actually got a vote. But runaway guesses, at least, or favorite in these riders' minds would have been Strider of the Atlanta Braves. Let's see what their World Series picks were. Efforting.
I think there are a lot of
Braves.
Braves?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Overwhelmingly Braves. That doesn't make me feel great. 13 votes for the Braves. Orioles got 4. Dodgers got 4. Phillies 2. Seattle 1. Interestingly enough, Houston or Texas did not get a single vote as the World Series champ in this kind of poll. They have Braves and Orioles.
Yeah, there's a lot of love for the Orioles in the AL.
See, it's interesting, though. Now you've got 5 voted for Houston to make it to the World Series, 1 voted for Texas to make it to the World Series, so none of those 6 voted for them to win it.
Seems kind of backwards.
Yeah, you'd think at least.
Think if you're putting them there.
At least somebody might think they'd win it, but apparently not. So that's baseball. It's starting. It's going to be fun. We'll see what happens. It's a long road to hoe.
Very much so. But starts tonight or today, like at noon.
Yeah, let's say not long from now.
But ESPN tonight.
A couple of games postponed. Braves, Phillies, Mets, and Brewers not playing. Everybody have a great Thursday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.